Just a little chazora here. The Mishnah says, "Elu dvarim she'ein chayov and aleh mishum pigul," and on this list is ketores. And the Mishnah seems to assume that the reason why there's no pigul in ketores is because we have a certain din in pigul, that pigul only applies on a davar sheyesh lo matirin, meaning something that would be nitar by something else. But in the case of ketores, the entire ketores is burnt on the mizbeach, and therefore there's no nitar. So he says, heichimish katzei klal sheyefagel b'ketores, forgetting about applying this technical foul, if you will, what would be pigul in ketores? Because if you're burning the entire thing on the mizbeach, what's the pigul of machsheves chutz? He's right now doing the haketorah. You know, you could always say that if you do an avoda for the sake of something that's supposed to come immediately, like achilus habos or haketores imurim, and you have a moil machar, then it creates pigul. But in a case where you have only one avoda, namely haketores haketores, so either you're being mocked to the ketores now, or you're not being mocked to the ketores now. But what's the pigul? What's the pigul meaning lechutz zmano over here? So he has four suggested answers. Let's just review them. The first answer is that at the moment of haketorah, he has in mind that he's going to be makdir half the ketores now, and the other half of the ketores he's going to leave till tomorrow. And the reason why he's not 100% on board with this pshat, that's why he's going to give three other possibilities, is because this pshat works out according to one mandi omer in Menachas Daf Yud Zayin, but not according to both mandi omer. One mandi omer says haktorah mefagelas haktorah, that you can take a certain avoda that requires a volume, and you can split the volume into two, and as you're doing the avoda, you have in mind that you can only do half of that volume, and tomorrow you're going to do the other half of the volume. What's the classical case? Eitzim, right? On a daily basis, they had Shnei Gizri Eitzim. They would bring Eitzim to the Mizbeach. And the Eitzim would have to be brought on the Ma'aroch, on the Mizbeach, on that day. What would happen if he had in mind, with the volume of these Eitzim, that he would only be Maktir, he would only be Misorev half of the Eitzim today, and leave the other half for tomorrow? So the Gemara in Masechta Menachos quotes a Mandi Omer called Harife, the sharp ones of Pupadisa, and they hold that Haktorah Mefagelas Haktorah. In other words, you can take it and split it in half. You're doing the Haktorah, for example, you're doing the Sreif on the Eitzim, and you have in mind that the rest of the Eitzim, the balance of the Eitzim, will be burnt tomorrow. That's called Pigul. And in the case of Haktorah Haktores, you could have in mind that now I'm going to be Makter half the Haktores and the other half tomorrow. So if we go according to the Harifei Pumpedisa, which Tosus quotes here on Daf Membeis on Membeis, we're okay. Because they hold Yesh Haktorah Shemefagelas Haktorah. And actually Tosus raises the question, according to that Mandi Omer, why doesn't our Mishnah mention Eitzim? You know, the Mishnah is covering all the whole gamut of Pigul. Well, according to Harifei Pumpedisa, there is a possibility of Pigul even in Eitzim. So why wasn't that mentioned in our Mishnah? That was Tosus's kasha. But be that as it may, the point here is that not everybody accepts Harifi Pumpadisa. And if you're doing one avoda and you want to split that avoda into two, volume-wise, and do the avoda on half of that volume today and the other half of the volume tomorrow, according to those who don't accept Harifi Pumpadisa, that does not qualify as pigul. So now we go on to possibility number two.
Of having two little
say it again one more time.
There's no psul of having too little amount in the ketorah.
Well, again, he's not bringing too little amount. The problem is he has in mind to bring the balance of the ketorah tomorrow. Do you follow what I'm saying? Let's say he's marked here everything on Ketores, but when he started his process, he had in mind,
or whatever,
it's all in his declaration that I'm going to be marked here the second half tomorrow, does that automatically generate pigul? And that's what our Mishnah wants to tell us, that there's no pigul because it's not a nitar. Now he goes on to his second possibility. And this was perhaps the most exciting of all. And that is holocha. That when you take the ketores and you put it on the mizbeach, you have to bring it to the mizbeach. What happens if at the moment that he brings it to the mizbeach, he had in mind that he'll do the haketorah tomorrow? We haven't started yet. This is just a discussion until
you. Waited for him. Is nothing
there. The shiel started 10:30, so you still have done another 7 minutes. Okay, but if you want, you can join us. We're having a little chazara on something that we discussed in the past.
Coffee is more important.
Believe
it or not, there are
coffee first, chazara second.
Issues in
question. Can I ask the rabbi if still I got the answer right to the question?
Oh, there you go.
I'm curious if I got the
answer. Yes.
So what we discussed yesterday is a chiddush of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim claims that holochas haketores is not an avoda at all. It doesn't have the status of an avoda, which would mean many different things. You know, who's doing the holochas haketores, and is there a machsheves pigul at the time of holochas haketores? According to Reb Chaim, and he proves this based on a shitas of Rambam, which has to do with the sugya of Yom Kippur of Yuma, that the Rambam is of the opinion that holochas haketores is not an avoda, period. And that's why the Rambam would allow the Kohen to be holding on to what's called a kaf, and the ketores is inside a bozech, which is inside the kaf. And normally we'd have a problem here called chatzitza. The Rambam doesn't blink here. He doesn't have chatzitza. The Rosh has an answer. It's not chatzitza because he does what's called l'kicha al yedei dover acher. But Reb Chaim proves that the Rambam doesn't have this new category of l'kicha al yedei acher, and therefore it should be a chatzitza. The answer is the dinam of chatzitza only applied during an avoda, that the Kohen's hands would have to be directly connected to the kli sharetz. But in this case, Reb Chaim says there is no such thing as an avod at that time. In other words, the entire avod of ketores begins and ends with the ketores itself. The halacha is nothing more than a technicality. And again, by the way, if I use my paradigm of Eitzim, we had also in Eitzim the same concept, that halacha sa'eitzim l'mizbeach is not an avodah. Therefore, there would be no possibility of having a machshemes pigul at the time of the halacha. Machshemes pigul only applies during the time of the avodah. This led us yesterday to a third possibility, and that was that with regard to haketores on Yom Kippur, Reb Chaim wants to say that because there's halacha of vehevi, the Torah says explicitly vehevi, that the Kohen has to bring, therefore there might be the status of an avoda to the halacha haketores on Yom Kippur, because the ketores has to go lifnai v'lifnim all the way into the kosh kadoshim, and the Torah says vehevi mibeis laparochas, he's got to bring it inside the kosh kadoshim, and there is a din of halacha. And Reb Chaim has a proof from a sugya that talks about the fact that when the Kohen Gadol did the avoda of the haketores Yom Kippur, he held the machta in his right hand and the kaf in his left hand. The Gemara says, how can he do that? After all, the avoda b'smol is psula. So you see that the Gemara understood that even when he's carrying the ketores over to the Kodesh Kadoshim in order to put the ketores on top of the gecholim, even that's considered an avoda. So we could say that our Mishnah here, when it addresses the issue of pigul in haketores, is talking about a case where on Yom Kippur he had a machsheves chutz lizmano while he was molech the ketores lifnai v'lifnim. Then he finally offers a fourth possibility here, that on Yom Kippur there's a din of chafino.
The third one was Yom Kippur, and
that there is a din of halacha. Right, the second one was that there's a din of halacha.
Yeah.
That we rejected based on... No, I'm sorry. You were right. The second one was halacha. First one was that there's halacha of ketore, that mefaglin mi ketores al ketores, mi haketora al haketora, that you can split the ketores into two. The second, and that we rejected because that's totally machlok. The second possibility was halacha, that we rejected based on Reb Chaim, who proves that in Ketores there is no avoda of halacha. That led us to the third possibility, that maybe on Yom Kippur Reb Chaim would agree that there isn't a status of an avoda vis-a-vis with regard to the halachas haketores lifnai v'lifnim. And finally, the fourth possibility is that on Yom Kippur there's a din of chafina. Chafina means that the Kohen has to dig his hands in and take up the ketores into two hands, and that has to be done bachutz, and then he brings the chafina lifnai v'lifnim. So there too, you might say that since it's halach of chafina, and the halach of the Torah requires chafina and ketores, if he had a machsheves pigul at the time of the chafina, that would register as pigul. And again, Rabbo said all these four possibilities just to explain the havamim. Lamaskana, the Mishnah says there is no pigul in ketores. I don't want anyone walking out of here thinking there is pigul in ketores. We were just trying to figure out what was the scenario and what was the possibility of having chafina in ketores. Good. That was just a little bit of chazora, so that we would fill in that time with chazora. Now the Don is here. We can mamish get started.
But he has this all in his notes,
right? He has it all in his. He has it in the palm of his hand.
Well, you have all this in your notes. So.
Yeah, you have to learn. I learned like I learned in law school. I learned the issues. I can always look up the answers. But you have to understand what's the issue before you.
The issue, I mean, the scenario?
No, not the case. No, you have the facts in front of you, but what's the question? Mm-hmm. Right? Because if you don't know what the question is, you don't know what to look for the answer. You can always look up the answer. So I don't memorize the different solutions. I try to in each shiur try to understand the question.
Nice.
Okay, Rabosai, so today's discussion...
That's what I said, I knew the question. So yes, I gave you the question that we assisted.
Is going to focus on the status of Koche Aku. A guy brings a carbon. What's the status of that carbon?
Koche, can you write it?
Koche Aku, you'll see it in the Mishnah. Open up to the Mishnah on Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph. I don't know if you got my message that's where we're starting today.
No,
you didn't get it. Okay.
Mem Hei.
Mem Hei Amud Aleph, 45A, I guess you'd call it. And if you look at the Mishnah, which is pretty much towards the top of the Amud, the Mishnah starts, and you might want to copy down those first three words, so you know what the subject of today's shiur is. Kodshe Ovdei Kochavim. Okay then?
Yeah.
So the printers have exempted me from having the tirch of having to write it on the board, because there it is, Kodshei Obdei Kochom. Okay? So now we're talking about the karbonos that the guy was Makdish, he designated for a karbon. Okay then? So the first point we want to make here as we read the Mishnah is that Lechora, we're talking about a case where it was the guy himself who was magdish the carbon for his own purposes. He's bringing his own carbon. However, you should know, and I'm basing myself here on a summary of many, many different achronim, that we're not 100% sure that if a nachri is magdish a carbon for the sake of a Yisrael, in other words, here we're talking about a case where he's magdish, we'll call him Christopher, okay, he's being magdish the carbon for his own sake. But what happens if Christopher has a Jewish friend and he wants to designate a behemah as a carbon on behalf of his Jewish friend? Would that din, would then the status of the carbon be that of a carbon nachri? In other words, all of kodshei akum, meaning all the dinim and the issues, as you'd call it, Don, that we're going to be addressing today have to do with something called kodshei akum. Does kodshei akum mean that two things happen, or only one of those two things would enough?
Akum is
short for, is a Rashi Tevis for Ovdei Kochavim.
Ah.
Okay then? Ovdei Kochavim, if you abbreviate it, is called an akum. And again, keep in mind that akum here does not mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean an idol worshiper. And I'll leave Art School on the side, because I don't even tell me how he translates it.
Idolater.
But I ask you not to tell me, because then I get very upset. Okay. Again, the translation here, for our purposes, of an Ovdei Kochavim is a non-Jew. I don't care. I don't care what religion he does or doesn't, whether he's an atheist or he's an idol worshiper, that's irrelevant. Anyway, so all these dinim that we're going to present here regarding kodshei ovdei kochavim, do they apply only in case number one or even in the case number two? Case number one means that A, the guy designated the carbon as a carbon, and B, he did so on behalf of himself. That's called one pshat. The other pshat is to say, let me explain, is that no, he designated the carbon, and that makes it into kodshei ovdei kochavim. For what purpose did he dedicate the carbon? Was it for himself or for a Jew? That's irrelevant. It automatically comes under the status with all the dinim that we're going to learn of kodshei ovdei kochavim, because the maisa hakdasha, which means the designation, was implemented by the guy. The other way is to say no. That's before the achronim. The simple way of understanding our Mishnah is to talk about a carbon of a guy, meaning not only was he magdish the carbon, did he designate the carbon, but moreover, he designated for himself, which means that it's not just a din in the hakdashas hakarbon, but also in the hakramas hakarbon. The hakramas hakarbon is a carbon on behalf of an oved kochavim. That's the din here, the issue here in the achronim that I just wanted to mention at the outset.
What was it? Wait, he brings in, he does a hafrasha, but he does it for himself, or
that's the classical case. Or even in a case where he's mafresh the carbon on behalf of a Jew,
and a Jew
himself is going to bring the carbon, and a kapara will be the kapara on behalf of the Jew. So the entire akrova was that of a Yisrael, but nevertheless, it already is clinched under this category and classified under this category of kodshei ovdei kochavim by the very fact that it was the guy who was magdish the carbon. It doesn't matter, it's irrelevant for whom he was magdish the carbon. It's irrelevant if the hakrov is going to be for the guy or it's going to be on behalf of the Jew. That's irrelevant. As long, according to this approach, as long as the guy was magdish the carbon, even if he wasn't magdish it for his own sake, but for the purpose of a kapar of Yisrael, that's called Amanashi's kapar of Yisrael, that too is considered carbon or kodshei ovdei kochavim. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I probably shouldn't have distracted us from that. I could have easily have left that out.
No, I think so.
Because I'm just afraid that this is just going to confuse you as we go along.
You said there's two possibilities. One for himself and one for the Jew.
Right. Okay. One possibility is that even if he's magdish for a Jew, since he did the akdosha, that's called kodshei ovdei kochavim. The other possibility is no. It doesn't become kodshei ovdei kochavim unless the kapara is on behalf of a goy. That makes it into kodshei. So if he was magdishit on behalf of a Jew, that's not kodshei ovdei kochavim, because the essence of the carbon, the kapara of that carbon, is on behalf of a Jew. It only becomes kodshei ovdei kochavim if he was magdishit on behalf of himself and not on behalf of a Jew.
Can I ask a more general question?
Yeah.
So in using the term kodshei,
why is it plural?
No, because we've been using hafreshah, right? He hefresh. He's designating the animal,
right?
But so when you designate, that's the kodshei is the designation.
Well yeah, the kodshei is the result, and the hakdosh is the action.
Ah, okay.
So in the verb, in the active verb, you'll say lehakdish. And if you're talking about the noun as it describes the basar karbon, that's called kodshei. Or, well, kodshei is besmichus, because we're attaching the word, or the word would have been kodesh.
Right?
So there's lahakdish and there's kodesh.
But it's in English, the designation or the consecration, which in Hebrew is the hafer.
Lehakdish or hakdasha, and the object or the animal that was consecrated is called kodshim, or called kodesh.
But we also use
in the plural. In smichus, it's called kodshei.
No, what's confusing me is you alternately use the Hebrew expression hafrasha. So
hafrasha equals hakdasha.
Ah, hafrasha.
Yeah, those are synonymous.
Synonymous.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You can even say lahakdish or lahafrish.
Okay.
Those are interchangeable.
Good.
Okay. Oh, so now the Mishnah says that there are a whole slew of unique dinim that apply to kodshei ovdei kochavim. And the first sentence in the Mishnah covers three of those dilim in one swoop, in one breath. Ein chayov in aleha mishum. Number one, pigul. Number two, nosar. And number three, tameh. So the laws, now I'm going to say in a general sense, and then I'll whittle it down a little bit more specifically. In a general sense, the laws of pigul, of nosar, and tameh, which are such fundamental laws in kachim, do not apply in the case of kachim of dekochov. However, that was a little bit too general, because the truth of the matter is that that's really an overstatement. That's not really accurate. It's not true that the laws of Pigul, Noser, and Tomei do not apply to Kodshe Ovde Kachov. They do apply to Kodshe Ovde Kachov. However, there's no what we call Chiv Kares. In other words, when the Torah says that if you eat Pigul or Nosar or Tomei, you Chayv Kares, right? If you eat Kodshim Betuma, or if you eat Kodshim that a Nosar, if you eat Kodshim that a Pigul, that engenders a very severe punishment. That is suspended with regard to Kodshi of the Kochom. Kodshi of the Kochom did not generate that severity of an Isur that would apply in Kodshi Yisrael. However, this does not mean that the carbon is kosher. That the carbon is kosher even if it was Pigul, even if it was Nosar, or even if it was Tomei. The carbon for sure is possible. So again, I'm just going to read you a little bit here of a summary of the Teferis Yisrael. The Teferis Yisrael, you should know, was one of the great commentaries on Mishnayos, on the Mishnah. And he writes the following, that the miut here, the exclusion of Kodshe Ovdei Kochavim. Oh, that's what you meant by miut?
Miut.
Oh, miut. Oh, whoa, that's really basic. I'm sorry.
That's the term.
Okay. There's something called a ribui. Okay, and there's something called a miut. Okay, ribui, I guess you call, again, I don't know what art school calls it, but I call it an inclusion. And miut, therefore, is what?
Exclusion.
Excellent. Exclusion. Okay? And all this that I'm writing here on the board has to do with what we call drushos. And another word for drushos, synonyms called yalfusos. Except that this is in Hebrew, Lashon Kodesh, and this is in Aramaic, but they're interchangeable. So the translation of a drush is yalfusa, and when we're deriving halachas from psukim in the Torah, we have one of two choices. Either there's an extra superfluous word that comes as a ribui to expand, or the pasuk adds a word as an exclusion to tell you dafka in this case, but not in other cases.
Uh-huh.
Do we have that?
Yeah.
Okay, now the word miut. If you wake up a scholar in the middle of the night and ask him what does the word miut means, he's not going to tell you this. That I promise you. Uh-huh. He's going to tell you that miut means minority. Okay? And this is in modern Hebrew, for example, in the state of Israel, when you talk about the silent minority, you talk about the miut sheshotek, right? The silent minority. That's what miut means. So you got to be careful. And when you ask for a translation of a word, you got to give the person that you're asking a context.
So when you use the word miut ase, that's the way you used it in that...
So then I don't know. That's already something. You have to go back to the tape and listen to... Give me a context.
I didn't get a chance yesterday, but I'll do it.
Yeah, you know, that's okay. I just don't know. I really honestly don't. I have no clue what miut ase means. I don't know. Poshut, it's gibberish to me, like Chinese. You know what I mean? I don't know a word in Chinese. Not even a word. I don't. Does anybody know how to say good morning in Chinese? Okay, so you're a bunch of ignorants like I am. I'm glad to know I'm not the only ignoramus here. How could you live your whole life on this earth world without knowing how to say good morning to a Chinaman?
My wife can count to 10 in Chinese.
Really?
She had a Chinese friend growing up.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
It's a language of confusion. Yeah. Mandatory.
Yes.
Language.
Yes, it should be mandatory in all schools. You know, you buy anything in this world, it's definitely from China. It's for Cheskes Chinese. So again, we're going to use this word miut now to refer to an exclusion. There's a miut, which we're going to learn about in the Gemara, to exclude the case of Kodshe Ovde Kochavim from all these dinim of Pigul, Nosar, and Tomei. And the Teferis Yisrael writes that this miut is only excluding Kodshe Ovde Kochavim from a Chiv Kares in cases where you ate pigul nosar tome of kodshe of the kochav avol mikolokom, but in any event, says the Pharisee Israel, hakarban atzma hu pasul, it's an invalid carbon, even though it's kodshe ovdei kochavim. So this mute that excludes kodshe akum is only excluding kodshe akum from the chiyuv achila of kares, but it's not excluding kodshe akum from the psul hakarbon. Now he adds another line here in the name of the minchas chinuch that he says le'inyan nosar. Ein iser klal lechol besar nosar mikodshe akum. Wow, this is pretty impressive. The Minchas Chinuch wants to say the following: that if you have kodshe akum, you're not allowed to leave it and postpone, delay the achila until after the zman, the allotted time, leaving it over. That would be an iser. But if that Isur was violated and for some reason the karba became nosar and they left the basar over, there's no Isur whatsoever to eat this basar. That's not what we said in the Tiferes Yisrael. Tiferes Yisrael was saying that it's not such an Isur chamur, it's not so severe, it doesn't generate, you know, a kares or something like that. But the Minchas Chinuch is going a step further and he's saying that if kodshe akum were left overnight, so to speak, till tomorrow, and it became nosar, then you're allowed to eat it. Interesting. But you're not allowed to leave it over. That you're not allowed to do. What we're seeing here, Rabosai, again, unfolding in front of our eyes, is that all the complex halachas and the nuances of differentiations that apply in general, now we're seeing them like all come to the fore with regard to kodshe akum. And we don't know. We're really in the dark. So what is the status of kodshe akum, you know, at the end of the day? You know, are we saying that there is pigul v'nosar and to pasul it, then there's an iser now according to Minchas Chinuch to allow this basar to become nosar? On the other hand, we're saying that if you went and you ate it, it's not so severe. Maybe it's even mutter in the case of nosar according to Minchas Chinuch. It's only osar because of psul karbon in the case of the Tiferes Yisrael. I mean, everything here, you know, it's like you have to know all of everything just to figure out the status of kodshe akum. So again, if by chance we get time, so far we're moving at a snail's pace, but that's okay. But what I did prepare for you is a beautiful article, an essay here, and I got one copy, maybe we can make more copies, in the Nefesh Tova to try to get a grasp on what is the status of kodshe ovdei kochav.
Who is not liable for kares?
Well, we're talking about someone who eats the nosar. In other words, what we're saying is that you're not let. In other words, whoever's obligated to eat the karba, let's say, for example, the guy. I mean, again, all this has to be discussed if we get to this article.
Okay, so I can.
Because I don't know, you know, there's Zion mitzvahs b'nei noach. So it does the Akum have a new mitzvah which is not listed in the seven, mm-hmm. called bringing a carbon or eating the carbon? You know, who's obligated and why? You know, again, that's
okay.
That's a profound question. But right now, I just want to survive, you know, the Mishnah and a few lines of Gemara so that we can appreciate this article. And again, we'll see. As you know, I'm a little bit pressured because I'm very happy that we were able to accommodate everyone, you know, if we're all not here, then it's we're not here, you know. So that was good. But on the other hand, I do have this albatross around my neck because I have the next year at 11:45. So let's see what we can accomplish. Okay. So now we're saying the following: that if kodshe akum became pigul, somebody went ahead, whether it be Yisrael or a guy, and he ate from this, then he's not chayav in the classical way that you'd be chayav for achilas pigul, meaning a Yisrael who eats pigul is chayav koris. That halach is suspended with regard to kodshe akum. So the pigul is pigul in the case of kodshe akum, but the achila does not generate a chayav koris. If the basar of the kodshe akum became nosar, then if somebody ate it, he would not be violating an Isur Kares like he would be if it would have been Kodshe Yisrael, the opposite of Kodshe Akum. And then if a Tomei would eat from Kodshim, there's a special Iser in the Torah that enjoins a Tomei, that means Tumas Aguf, from eating Kodshim, that Iser is suspended with regard to Kodshe Akum. Then we have the next discussion. This is called Shchutei Chutz, which means that any carbon that has to be brought in the Azara, if you shecht it outside the Azara, which let's say that was pretty popular during what period of time?
During Shiva.
What's called Heter Bamos, that was the answer I was looking for, which are many different periods of time throughout Jewish history, up until the Mikdash of Shlomo Melech. But before the Mikdash of Shlomo Melech, there were many different chunks of time where there was a Heter Bamos. And that would be chutz. That would mean I set up a bomo in my backyard. There's no azara here. And that's talking about heter bomos. But let's say there's no heter bomos, which means that the carbon has to be brought where?
In
the azara. And now he took the carbon out of the azara and he shechted it outside of the azara. That engenders normally a chiv karis had it been kodshi Yisrael. But because it's kodshi akum, potter. Again, the language potter seems to indicate that we suspend the chiyuv kares, but nevertheless it is a violation of an isur. And once again, that's going to be an issue here that we have to derive. Now, in a footnote here, he tells us in the name of the Shittim Kubetzes that the source for this din, if you can listen carefully, is a pasuk in Vayikra Yud Zayin, which says, Daber el Aaron v'el bono v'el kol b'nei Yisrael. That's the opening line in the parasha called Shchutei Chutz, which tells us that if you shecht the carbon outside the Azor, you get kares for that. But the opening line in that parasha, the introduction, says, Daber el Aaron v'el bono v'el kol b'nei Yisrael. So from the fact that the Torah added the words v'el kol b'nei Yisrael, we're going to derive that this whole, what word can I use, this whole sugya, this whole parasha, this whole entity called Shchutei Chutz only applies to Bnei Yisrael, and it doesn't apply to Akum, to non-Jews. Now again, keep in mind that that's not really what we're discussing here. The Shittim Kubetzes is saying something that honestly defies logic over here, and that's again why I'm pushing to get ahead, to hopefully we'll get to the point where we'll be intelligent enough to learn this article, because, okay, it's true that if a guy shechts a carbon outside of the Mikdash, he's not chayef for such a thing. He only has 7 mitzvahs, he doesn't have 8 mitzvahs. But what does that have to do with our discussion in this Mishnah? Why is the Shittim Kubetzes quoting that halach as a source for the din of our Mishnah? The din of our Mishnah is a totally different din. And that is that if a Yisrael would take this carbon and it has the status of kodesh al tikhav, and he would shecht it outside the Azara. Let's say, for example, you know, Christopher asks me, he knows I'm a great shochet, and I got an excellent grade in my shechita exam, both my written and my orals. And he says to me, do me a favor, shecht my carbon outside the Azara. I'm not allowed to shecht Shchutei Chutz. A Yisrael would ask me to shecht his carbon outside the Azara, I would violate any sakaris if I complied. But here, we're saying that a Yisrael, if he wants to, he and the guy appoints him to do so, he can shecht this carbon b'chutz, and he doesn't violate the Isur Shchutei Chutz. Why? Because the kodshim is called kodshe akum. That has nothing to do with the Shittim Kubetzes. The Shittim Kubetzes is quoting a source for an entirely different halacha, which means that a guy is not chayev. He's not in violation of any Isur if he takes a carbon and shechts it b'chutz. Let's say he takes a carbon shel Yisrael, 100% classical carbon, and he brings it outside the Azara, and this Christopher would shecht it outside the Azara. The Torah says, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael tells me to exclude Akum, that Akum is not included in the command, or the prohibition, shall we say, of Shchutei Chutz. What does that have to do with our question? Our question is whether Yisrael would violate Shchutei Chutz if he took Kodshe Akum. So this sheet of Kubetzes, which Amir Tzchem will come back to in just a few minutes, is very problematic. The sheet of Kubetzes is addressing a very important question, but we have no clue what his answer is. His important question is, how do we know that if a Jew shechts a korban of a guy outside the Azara, he doesn't violate the Isur Shchutei Chutz? And we have to know the answer to that question, because the Mishnah says it. So we've got to figure out how the Mishnah knows this. But he brings a source for an entirely different halacha, and that is the case of a guy who shechts a korban b'chutz. So if I were to write a little bit of a chart here, there are two cases. One case is guy sheshachat kodshim b'chutz, okay? And let's say this kodshim was kodshe Yisrael. That's case number one. And case number two is Yisrael sheshachat kodshe akum b'chutz. Now take a look at these two cases. They're totally different from one from the other. The Shita of Gubetzes is asking one question and he's answering it with a different question. We didn't ask him that question, but he's answering a different question. Our question was, why is it that if Yisrael would shech the Kodshe Akum outside the Azara, what's the source for the fact that he's Potur? Why isn't that called Shchutei Chutz? The Shita of Gubetzes answers, because if a guy shechts kodshim b'chutz, he's potter, because the Torah says b'nei Yisrael, right? B'nei Yisrael mitzuvim b'isur shchutei chutz. But an akum is not mitzuvah; he's not commanded in this whole parasha, this whole isur shchutei chutz. That's wonderful, but what does that have to do with our issue? The Shiva Gubetzes has to answer his own question. His own question, by his own admission, is how do we know that if Yisrael shechts a korban of a guy, he's not chayef for shchutei chutz? That's what we have to understand. So I'm just throwing out this question so that we'll know where we're standing. You can take this. I mean, again, it'll be worth five cents on eBay in about 400 years.
Is that Mikubetzet?
Shita Mikubetzet. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara says, let's try to get a grasp of what is the status of Kodshe Ovdei Kochavim. The Brisa says, Lo Nenim Vilo Moalim. Now, this itself is a contradiction in terms. You can't say Lo Nenim Vilo Moalim in the same breath. Why? Because if you're telling me Lo Moalim, which means that there's no Isur Me'ila with regard to this carbon, that means you can't use it for your own purposes, then you're telling me Lo Moalim, there is no Isur Me'ila. Now, if I say that Me'ila means you're not allowed to use it for your purposes, and then I tell you, but there is no Isur Me'ila, what does that imply?
There's no
that you're allowed to use it for your own purposes. Are you with me? Again, Me'ila, the Isur Me'ila tells me you're not allowed to use Kodshim for your own purposes. You can't ride this animal or plow your field with the animal, right? Because of the Isur Me'ila. Now I'm telling you that we brought to Kodshe Akum, there is no Isur Me'ila. So what am I telling you? If I tell you there's no Isur Me'ila, then what am I telling you? You're allowed to ride this animal? You're not allowed to ride
you
this animal.
You can't get hung up.
Oh, so then what does the Mishnah say below Nenin? Which means that you're not allowed to have Hanor from it. You know, the Mishnah is contradicting itself in the same breath. So Rashi and the other Rishonim want to say that the words Lo Nenin mean an Isa Drabana. And here's the way you read this, Bryce, that even though there's no Isa Me'il on a Doraisa level, the Rabbanon instituted a Gzera with an Isa Hanor. And the reason for that is because they're afraid that you're not going to differentiate your mind between this cow and that cow. This cow was designated, or as Don would say, consecrated by a goy. This cow was consecrated by a Yisrael. Well, if I'm allowed to ride this cow, then tomorrow I'll ride that cow. So Rabbanon instituted an Iser Hanah, which is Midivrei, which is a classical Gzera. But on a Deraisa level, there's no Me'ilah. Okay, now what this means, halacha l'maisa, let's say he violated the Isur Hanah, which was only Durabana. Is he guilty of, is he liable for Me'ila? Again, if you're liable for Me'ila, you have to bring a carbon. That's called Hasham Me'ilos. With this guy who rode the cow that was consecrated by a guy as a carbon, would this cow rider be chayav a carbon me'ila?
I would not think so.
Absolutely not. He's not chayav me'ila. That's what it says. Lomar, he violated Nisa de Rabbanan. He had a no where the Rabbanan says he's not allowed to, but he's not chayav. Even though he violated the Issa d'Rabbanan, he had an off from it, he's not Chayav Mishum Me'ilah. Now that's very fascinating. Because where do we find Kachim without an Issa Me'ilah? You know, if you ask me, what is Me'ilah? Me'ilah is the basic definition of Kachim. You know, something is consecrated, has Kedusha. You're not allowed to benefit from it. It belongs to Hashem. That's called Me'ilah. And here we're saying, no, it's Kodesh. And it is a karbon, and the guy could bring a karbon, but it doesn't have me'ilah. Very strange. Again, you know, that's why I say this is a fascinating sugya if you're trying to get a grasp into kachim, because all of our concepts of kachim. And then the Brisa continues. It says, "Ein chayov and aleh mishum pigel nosar v'tameh." Okay, so far so good. This is a repetition of what we saw in the Mishnah, that kachim akum do not lend themselves to the chiyuv of pigul, nosar, and tamei. Again, we suggested that means that if the Yisrael went ahead and he ate this pigul, nosar, and tamei, he would not be liable, but the carbon itself is possible. And then the Brisa says, v'yein osin tmura. If the guy consecrated this cow, we'll put this cow here on the right, and now there's another cow on the left, and you say about the cow on the left, harezu tmura zu, does the Kedushas carbon of the carbon that was consecrated by a guy transfer over? Again, transfer is a bad word. I think we had a better word, graft over, right? Because Tmura only means that you add Kedusha, you don't subtract Kedusha. But is there Kedusha on the Behemas Chulin? And the answer is no. It's almost as if we're saying that although the carbon that was consecrated by a guy is a carbon, he has Kedusha's carbon, it's going to be Nikrav al Gabi Mizbeach, but nevertheless, it's somewhere in the scale between chulin and kachim. It's a little less kachim than real modified kachim. And how does that express itself? Number one, it expresses itself in the fact that there's no isim ilah, which is almost, that's mamish, undermines our definition of kachim. And now we're saying it doesn't have a powerful enough status as kedusha so that he can now graft that kedusha onto a beimus chulin. Number three, Ein mevi'a nesachim. Okay, there's something called nesachim, which is a classical accompaniment to a karbon. And in the case of a karbon of a guy, meaning it was consecrated by the guy, there's no accompaniment for nesachim. So let's say, for example, when the guy brings this karbon to the Beis HaMikdash, because he was makdashit on behalf of himself, and he wants to offer, together with his karbon, nesachim. Right? Nesachim are made of yayin, of wine. So it seems like he's not allowed to do that. In other words, we're not going to accept niske yayin. Comes along Rashi, and he says, no, that's not what the Mishnah, that's not what this price is talking about. If the guy brings his karbon, he will bring niske yayin. But when it says ein mevi'a nesachim, it means that if a person takes upon himself a vow, a pledge to bring nesachim, not as an accompaniment to a karbon, but as, let's call it a karbon b'fnei atzmo, its own karbon, a guy cannot do that. A guy cannot accept upon himself a valid binding pledge to bring nesachim. Again, if he's bringing his karbon and the karbon requires nesachim, that's one thing. But the nesachim, if it accompanies the karbon, that's one thing. But if the nesachim is a karbon b'fnei atzmo, that's not allowable. That we can't allow the guy to bring nesachim. Okay, we don't know why. I'm a karbonam, but if the guy brings his karbon, to nesachim, he will accompany his karbon with nesachim divrei Rabbi Shimon. So all that we learned until now is according to Rabbi Shimon. And you know what? Life would be a lot easier without Rabbi Shimon. If we had only Rabbi Yossi. Om Rabbi Yossi, ro'ani b'kulon lahachmir. That basically we should identify the status of the karbon of a guy with the status of a karbon of Yisrael. Kachei Nachrim equals Kachei Yisrael. And that would make life easier for us. So we don't have to rack our brains and try to figure out, well, which aspects of Kodshim do apply to Kodshim Akum and which do not. Take the entire kit and caboodle. Says Rabbi Yossi, we're going to make an absolute equation and identify Kodshe Akum as if they were Kodshe Yisrael. And why is it so? Shenemar Bohen Lashem. What does it mean? Shenemar Bohen Lashem. Oh, so the Pasuk, which is the source for Kodshe Akum, is in Vayikra Perkhof Beis. And there it says, Ish Ish mi Beis Yisrael U min Hager bi Yisrael. Asher Yakriv Korbono, L'chol Nidrehem, U'l'chol Nidvosem, Asher Yakrivu Lashem Liola. The Pasuk is talking about not only B'nei Yisrael, but also from non-Jews. In this case, the Torah is talking about what we call a Ger Toshav, meaning he lives amongst Jews, right? Because the guy's not coming from Antarctica to bring a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. He lives, apparently, in some area of the land. And he follows his seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach rigorously. You know, he's very dedicated to what he has to be dedicated to according to the Jewish law. Now he brings a korban. So the Torah says, well, yakriv korbano, l'chol nidreyem, u'l'chol nidvosa. But then it says, asher yakrivu l'ashem li'ola. Says Rav Yossi, you know what the word l'ashem means? L'ashem means like a carbon of a Yisrael, which is Lashem. The Torah is equating a carbon of a non-Jew with a carbon of a Yisrael. And that's what he's saying here, that we derive from Lashem.
That's his drush on what Lashem is.
Correct. His drush, in this case, it's a ribui, right, that the extra word Lashem is coming to include Kodshe Akum and elevate it to the same status as Kodshe Yisrael. Which, as I said, that would make life a lot easier for ourselves. Now, do you see this Tosis Dibri HaMaschil Roeh?
Yes.
Okay, that's the opening line of Rabbi Yossi. Roeh, Roeh Nibakulam. So Tosis points out that this reflects the drosha, the derivation in the Gemara in Chulin on Daf Yud Gimel, because it says in the opening two words of the parsha that I just read to you in Vayikra Chavbeis, it says Ish, Ish. What's the double language Ish? So there's an extra word which is superfluous. It's coming now for a ribui to include Ovdei Kochavim, that they can take a neder, which would mean a pledge, a general pledge, or nedava. Nedava means they can consecrate a specific animal, ki Yisrael, just like a Jew can do so. However, the Nitziv, who's quoted here in a footnote, he says that the pasuk that Rabbi Yossi has in mind is a pasuk in Vayikra Chaf Beis, but not Pasuk Yudches, Ish Ish, but rather Pasuk Gimel, which is much earlier. And it says, Asher Yakdishu B'nei Yisrael Lashem. And that Pasuk is in the parasha of what's called Tumas Aguf. In other words, there's an Isur that someone who's Tomei is not allowed to eat Kodshim. And from that Pasuk, the Gemara derives later on, B'nei Yisrael V'lo Akum, meaning that there's no Isur of Achilas Tumah in the Tomei Tumas Aguf in the case of Kodshe Akum. That's going to be the source for Rabbi Shimon, who, if you remember, Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah adds the case of Tomei. Comes along Rabbi Yossi, and he says that since it says in that pasuk, Asher Yakdishu Bnei Yisrael Lashem, the word Lashem is coming as a ribui, as an inclusion, to tell us that anything that's Mukdash Lashem, anything that's sanctified to Hashem, is included in this Isur, which means if you're Tomei, you're not allowed to eat it. And there's no difference between Kodesh Yisrael and Kodesh Akum. Which means that Rabbi Yossi clearly is arguing with everything that Rabbi Shimon said at the beginning of this Mishnah. Because if he's arguing against Rabbi Shimon about Tomei, then presumably he's arguing with Rabbi Shimon with regard to Pigel and Noser as well, and basically elevating or identifying the status of Kodshe Akum with that of Kodshe Yisrael. So we have now, just to summarize, a fundamental machlok between Rav Shimon and Rav Yossi. Rav Shimon says that the status of Kodshei Akum is somewhat muddy. I don't know what word to use. It's me'urpal, we say in Hebrew. It's neither here nor there. It's somewhere in the twilight zone. Whereas according to Rav Yossi, no, the Kodshei Akum have the same exact status as Kodshei Yisrael. Okay, now the Braisa goes back to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon said that there's no Chiv Me'ila in Kodshei Akum. And the Gemara says that that's not simple. That also breaks down into two categories. But when do we say, according to Rav Shimon, that Kodshei Akum are not included in Me'ila? That's only the Kodshei Mizbeach. Okay, there are two types of Kedushos. This is the most fun. If I were to give you an introduction to Kodshei, it would be right here. Introduction to all of Kodshei. It'll be right here in this line in the Gemara. The Gemara is differentiating here the most fundamental differentiation between what's called Kedushas HaGuf, otherwise known as Kedushas Mizbeach. Those are synonymous terms. I'll get back to that in a second. As opposed to Kedushas Perek HaBayis, which is otherwise known as Kedushas Damim. What's the difference between the two? Kedushas HaGuf means I took an animal, and this could apply also to Soles from Mincha and so forth and so on. Right, ofos, behemos, anything, and I designated for the mizbeach. Anything that's designated for the mizbeach has kedushas mizbeach, which means that the kedusha is through and through, so to speak, in every particle, in every molecule, in every fiber of the entity that you are makdish lemizbeach, to such an extent that with regard to kedushas mizbeach, there's no pigeon, which means there's nothing you can do to remove the status as kodesh. It's essential, you know, it becomes part of the very lifeblood, the soul of that object. Then there's another type of Kedusha, that's called Kodshei Berek HaBayis, otherwise known as Kodshei Kedushas Damim, Dalid Mem Yud Mem. Kedushas Damim means that it's not really inherent Kedusha, that the object is through and through, Duch and Duch is Kodesh, but rather the object represents a certain value. And that abstract value belongs to Hegdish. And what the Gemara is now, what the Braisa now is postulating is that when Rabbi Shimon makes the contention that there's no Chi of Me'ila, that's only as far as Kodshei Mizbeach is concerned. Meaning, if you want to know to what extent does the Goy have the ability to engender a Kedushas Karban, here Reb Shimon says it's very limited. Then this is not a real McCoy, full-fledged, full-blasted Kedushas Karban. So the Kedushas Mizbeach is lacking, it's deficient, and it doesn't generate an Isur Me'ilah. But there's another type of Me'ilah, and that would apply to Kedushas Akum, to Kodshei Akum, to the same extent that it applies to Kodshei Yisrael. And that's called Kodshei Berek HaBayis. If let's say the Akum comes forward and he designates an object for the Beis HaMikdash, it's not necessarily a live animal or anything else that could be brought on the Mizbeach. You know, it's, he takes this table and he says, I hereby consecrate this table to the Beis HaMikdash, or let's say he has wood or stones, and the Beis HaMikdash needs that wood or stones in order to fix up the, you know, the Mikdash, because something got a little bit damaged over here, so for the renovation of the Mikdash, that's called Kedushas Berek HaBayis. Berek HaBayis literally means for the sake of fixing up the Bayis. Bayis means the Beis HaMikdash. So if he went ahead, the guy, and he designated for Kodshei Berek HaBayis, then here there's no difference between his act of HaKadosha and the Kodesh that he engenders and that of Yisrael. It's Molin Bahem. There is an Isur Mila. Why? Because he, no less than a Jew, has the ability to designate it as a monetary entity that's owned by Hegdesh. You know, I always say that Hegdesh is like the greatest, you know, enterprise in the halachic universe in terms of how much money they own. You know, they own more than, you know, L'Havdil El Fadolos, you know, the Vatican, they say, is very wealthy. You know, and they produce their own stamps and their own coins, I don't know what. So L'Havdil El Fadolos, we have something called Hegdesh. Hegdesh has a tremendous monetary ownership. It's like the biggest cartel in the world with many, many assets. Anybody who says, I'm makdish this for the sake of Berek HaBayis, it means he's makdish the dumb in the value of the object. And here there is such a thing as pijon. Pijon means you can transfer the kedusha, the sanctity, from the object over to something else that has the same value. That's because the kedusha is only in kedushas domim, it's only in its value, but not inherent in the fiber of the object. And that kedushas domim, called bedek habayis, generates an isur me'ila. Me'ila means you're not allowed to benefit from something that doesn't belong to you. To whom does it belong? To the greatest, you know, company or enterprise of ownership in the world. What is that mushroom, gigantic mushroom of enterprise of ownership in the world? That's called what? Hegdesh. Hegdesh. That's called Hegdesh. Who represents Hegdesh for the monetary purposes? Anybody know?
Hegdesh or Sanhedrin?
No. That's called the Gizvar.
Ah, the Gizvar.
Okay. I know a person who has that name, Gizvar. Maybe he descends from one of the early Gizvarim in the Beis Hamikdash. I don't know. So the Gizbar is sort of like the appointed representative of this great financial enterprise, this magnificent conglomerate company called Hegdesh, and he does all their, you know, their monetary transactions. So in the case of Kedushas Domim, which was given over to the Gizbar representing the bias, he can go ahead and sell it on the open market and transfer the Kedusha from one object to the other. I have here a note in the name of one of the Achronim, that according to Rashi at least, this distinction that's being made in the context of Rabbi Shimon seems to imply that according to Rabbi Yossi, who disagrees with Rabbi Shimon, even in the case of Kodshim Mizbeach, on the part of a Goy, he sanctified it for the Mizbeach, Yesh Bo Din Me'ila. In other words, the Goy has, as we said before, according to Rabbi Yossi, the full-fledged power and authority to generate Kedusha of Kodshim, of Mizbeach, in an animal. And that animal becomes Kodshim Mizbeach. And insofar as it's Kodshim Mizbeach like that of Bnei Yisrael, and it generates an Isur Me'ila. Okay, that's according to Rashi. Tosfos, Divrei Maskil Dumya, which we didn't get up to, has apparently a different approach, which you might see in one line over here. No, it's actually, because this Tosfos starts on Mem Hayam and Aleph and goes on to Mem Hayam and Beis. They couldn't fit it all into one page. And he has a different take on Rabbi Yossi, which again is going to be kind of important later on, but I think we'll leave it for later on. Now, what's the source in the Torah? That's what we have to know for these halachas in Kodshei Akum. So first the Brisa says, lo nenim v'lo molim bahem. What is the source for that? Shalom Nenim, the fact that there's an Isur Hanah in Kodshei Akum, according to Rabbi Shimon, is Midrabanan. That's only Takoras Chachamim. Lo Malim, how do we know that the Torah excludes Kodshei Akum from Me'ilah? That's a Deraisa Halacha. And the answer is, the Gomar, we derive Me'ilah with what's called Chet Chet Mitruma. Okay, so let's go through the Psukim. This is, by the way, a very, very famous Gzeira Shava, Chet Chet Mitruma, that appears all over the place, all over Shas. The Gemara says the following. Tibetruma Ksiv, in the parish of Truma, this is in Vayikruch of Beis, it says, V'lo Yechalu is Kodshei Bnei Yisrael, Asher Yorimu Lashem. And this Pasuk of Bnei Yisrael teaches me, and again this is a Miut, okay, not a Miut, V'lo Ovdei Kochavim, that a Jew is able to generate Truma when he separates whatever he separates from his crop for the Kohen for Truma, v'lo ovdei kochav. But a guy, according to Reb Shimon, again, this is all according to Reb Shimon, cannot designate Truma, because the Torah says in the parish of Truma, Kodshei Bnei Yisrael. And from this, we're going to derive a conclusion about Me'ilah in the case of Kodshei Nachrim. Now I have to find the second pasuk, which I'm not finding right this second. Just 1 second. Okay, I owe you that debt. Yeah, where's the chet chet over here? The gzeir shav chet chet. So again, in Truma it says chet, and in Kodshim it says chet. Oh, maybe I have it here. Oh, here it is. In the Parsha Me'ila, in Vayikra He, it says, Nefesh ki simol mal v'chata'a bishkaga. So we have the word chet with regard to kodshim that generated Nisa Me'ila. And in Truma, it says in Vayikra Chav Beis, which was the pasuk that we mentioned before, but a little bit early actually in that parsha, it says, V'lo yisu olav chet. So this sets up Gzeres Shava chet chet to equate Truma and kodshim. And just like in Truma there's a mute of Bnei Yisrael to exclude Akum, so too by virtue of this Gzeres Shava, we exclude Akum from Me'ilah. So in the Parsha Me'ilah it says Chet, and therefore we take the Bnei Yisrael, the low Akum, we put it into the Parsha of Me'ilah.
That's because this, the word Chet is duplicated, so you derive the second law.
Correct. In other words, that whatever is true about Truma is now true about Me'ilah, because in both Truma and Me'ilah it uses the word Chet, the Torah. And therefore, just like in Truma, we have a mil to exclude Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim. So that halacha Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim is now grafted onto, or reproduced onto Me'ilah. Therefore, Ovdei Kochavim cannot generate kodshim according to Rav Shimon with an Iser Me'ilah. V'ein chayovin olav mishum pigol nosar v'tomei my timer. What's the source for that? The osi pigol minosar. We had already earlier in the Masechta, that there's a Gzeres Shava called Avon Avon Minosar. In other words, the laws of Pigol are derived from the laws of Nosar, because the Lashon Avon appears in both. In Pigol, the Torah says, HaNefesh Ochelos Mimena Avona Tisa, and in Nosar it says, Va'ochlav Avono Yisa. The Asi Nosar. So now we have what we call a chain. This is like the law of transmutation. In other words, we're equating on the bottom of our list Pigel with Nosar, and then on the top of our list we're equating Nosar with Tame, with Tuma. The Asi Nosar Chilul Chilul Mituma. In other words, the word Chilul applies in both appears, I should say, in both parshios, in the parsha of Nosar and in the parasha of Tomei, which enjoins someone who has Tomei, has Tumas Aguf, from eating Kodshim. So just like in Nosar, there's a halacha that if a person eats Nosar, he's Chayiv Kares. So too, in Achilas Kodshim B'Tumah, he's Chayiv Kares. Why? Because B'Tumah, now we're going to equate the two, because B'Tumah Ksiv, with regard to eating Kodshim B'Tumah, the Pasuk says, V'Yikra Chav Beis V'Nozru Mikodshei B'nei Yisrael. Okay, that's as far as Bnei Yisrael is concerned. And then it says, V'lo yechalalu. So we have the word chilul in the parasha of Tumah. And the Torah says, Bnei Yisrael, V'lo ovdei kochavim. And this word chilul applies even in the parasha, appears in the parasha of Nosar. And the parasha of Nosar, it says chilul as well. So now we have a double equation, if you follow what I'm saying. So we're taking the Bnei Yisrael v'lo Akum from Tumah and applying it to Nosar, and that's by virtue of the Gzeres Shava Chilul Chilul. And now it's as if we have Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim in the parsha of Nosar, and now Nosar is equated to Pigel. And why is Nosar equated to Pigel? That's because of the Gzeres Shava of Avon Avon. So now we can take this. You follow what's happening here. There's a whole chain. We're taking the words Bnei Yisrael to the exclusion of Akum from Tumah all the way to Pigel with one stop in the middle, and that's Nosar, which tells me that in all these three cases, based on the equation of Chet Chet and then Avon Avon, that in all these three cases, Akum, when he's Makdish a Karbon, that Karbon is excluded from Tumah, meaning the Iser of Tumas Aguf to eat, to partake of the Nosar. Number two, it excludes the Kodshim of Akum if it became Nosar from the Iser of Achilas Nosar. Number three, it excludes the case of an Akum that brought a Karbon, there was a Pigel in the Avodas HaKarbon, and if the Yisrael would eat that Karbon, he's not Chayev for Achilas Pigel, and that's because it says Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim. I looked in the parasha of Pigel, I didn't see Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim. I looked in the parasha of Nosa, I didn't see Bnei Yisrael v'lo Ovdei Kochavim. Ah, but then I looked in the parasha of Tumah, and there I found that it says V'inazru Mikodshei Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael v'lo Akum. Now I have the equation between Tumah and Nosar, and the equation from Nosar all the way up to Pigal, and that makes me a happy camper, because now I'm on the side of Rav Shimon. Okay, so let's see if at least we can get a bit of an insight into the status of Kodshei Akum as far as Rav Shimon is concerned. And here I want you to look at Simon Tzadi Beis, okay, which I photocopied for you. It appears on page Reish Tzadi Beis. So it's Simon Tzadi Beis, Reish Tzadi Beis, and Chelik Beis. So I'm assuming you have the second Chelik.
Simon Reish.
Simon Tzadi Beis, that's the equivalent of 92. Just make sure you're in the second volume. So again, I photocopied this for you, but we have one copy.
I could make two copies.
Well, again, we don't have that much time. So, you know, I'll sort of highlight the main points. And he says the following. We have a machlokas here in our Mishnah between Rav Shimon and Rav Yosi about whether the dinim that apply to Kodshei Yisrael also likewise apply to Kodshei Akum. Rav Shimon says no, and Rav Yosi says yes. Lo nisbayar b'gemara. The Gemara never asks the following question. You know, it doesn't ask for the yesod or the shorish, the root of the machlokas. For example, we want to know, are you chai feshkutei chutz on the case of Kodshei Akum, by Kodshei Yisrael, if you take it outside the Azorah, you're chayav. And in the case of Kodshei Akum, there's no chiyuv of according to Rav Shimon of Shchutei Chutz. What's it all about? Ayin Tosis Yontif. Tosis Yontif lived, I would say, if I'm not mistaken, about 350, 400 years ago. And he's one of the super commentaries on Mishnayos. His last name was Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R. And his first name, you might guess, was Yontif, believe it or not. Today, I don't know anyone who calls that child Yontif, but it's a happy name. And he writes, Shalom Motza Bazet Tat Mefurash. He couldn't get down to brass tacks. What's the source, what's the root of this machlokes regarding Shchutei Chutz in the case of Kodshei Akum? However, you may recall that about a half hour ago, I quoted to you a Shita Mekubetzes from the footnote in Masifta. And guess what? The Nefesh Tova also quotes the same identical Shita Mekubetzes, who says, apparently in the name of one of the Rishonim, that we have a drasha in the case of a Yisrael who shechts a karban of a goy bachutz. I'm sorry. Start again. Where's my page again? In the case of a guy, that was number one, a guy who shechts kodshim bachutz, regular classical kodshim Yisrael, he shechts bachutz, that there's no mitzvah here. There's the mitzvah of shchutei chutz, meaning the whole parasha with the isur of shchutei chutz applies only to a Yisrael and not to an akum. Says the Shita Mekubetzes Hachinami, based on that drasha, we're going to derive the conclusion that there's only a chiyuv of shchutei chutz. Now we're talking about a Yisrael who shechts a korban bachutz in the case of Kodshei Yisrael, but not in the case of Kodshei Akum. Ad kan l'shono. That's all we get from the Shita Mekubetzes. Now, where is this drasha that a goy is not included in the iser of shchutei chutz? Right, that's number one on your list. That's a sugya, says the Rosh Hashiva, at the end of Masechta Zvachim. Very impressive how he knows this. On page 115, Kuftes Vav. And there the Gemara quotes a brisa. The brisa says the following. Achelo hukama mishkan, before they established the mishkan, habamos mutaros, the avoda b'bchoros. So this may be disappointing news for the Kohanim, but don't worry, it was only before the Mishkan was set up. And the Bechar, the firstborn, was in charge of all the Avodah. And the Avodah could take place, the Korbanos could be brought anywhere. There was no place on the face of the earth that was excluded from Korbanos. Not only that, HaKol K'sherim L'Hakim, you could be makuv anything. Behema, Chaya, Of, Zecharim, Nekevas, Tmimim, Balimumim, Tahorim, Tmeim, everything.
Is that true even outside of Eretz Yisrael? Or
I'm talking Dafka outside of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, also in Eretz Yisrael, but I'm saying anywhere on the face of the earth.
They're in a Sinai.
So if you, okay, but I'm just saying, theoretically, let's say you lived in on the Antarctica and you wanted to bring a carbon, then you could bring a carbon in Antarctica. Why? Because it was before Hakamas HaMishkan. And by the way, the same thing is going to apply after the Mishkan period, before they set up another Mishkan, or after the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed, etc., etc. I'm not going into all the details now because that's not the main subject. Oh, the Nachrim. What about a guy who wants to bring a carbon? Is Bizman Azeh, the Brisa tells us in the end of Masechta Zevachim, even though our Jewish people, do not have a Heter Bamos. The only place in the face of the earth we can bring a carbon is in the Migdash. Again, we don't have the Migdash, but Rashaim Lasos came. So a guy today, interesting, could set up his own home altar, backyard altar, and he could be basically anything on the Mizbeah. The only exception is Tommy. If he has an animal that's Tommy, that he's not allowed to bring even on a Bama. Okay, but again, let's not get off on a tangent. So Natalie Gemara says, Minani Mili. What's the source for this halach that a guy is allowed to shecht a carbon anywhere on the face of the earth, even bizman hazeh? Tanu Rabbanan, in the parasha of Shchutei Chutz, which prohibits a Jew, as we'll soon see, only a Jew, from shechting a carbon outside the Mikdash, the Torah opens up the parasha by saying, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, says the Braisa, Bnei Yisrael mitzuv mal Shchutei Chutz, v'ein ove kochavim mitzuv al Shchutei Chutz, lefichach, Kol echad v'echad, every guy, anywhere on the face of the earth, at any time in history, bona lo bama liatzmo, he sets up his own personal altar, u'makriv aleh kol asher yirtze. He can bring any carbon, except for a tummy. Okay, that's it. Now, I just want to make it clear, we're not talking about worshipping idols. Avodas kochavim is one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach. I don't want anyone to walk out of here thinking that we're advocating goyim to bring karbonos for different Buddha. I don't know, Buddha is very confusing to me. I'm not sure what Buddhism is, but for any other god, so to speak. But if he has in mind L'shem Hashem, set up his own personal bama. If this keeps going on the way there's some goyim down south are interested in Judaism, this could be a very lucrative business. Help the goyim bring karbonos down in South Carolina. we'll charge a little for that. You understand? Like, it's like those guys, I don't know if you know, the guys who go around the cemeteries. They wait for some family to come along who has to do a Hakamas HaMatzeva or a Yahrzeit Sale, and the family doesn't know how to do it. No, for $100, I'll do it for you. It says a mole. Okay. Anyway, that was just on the side. Now we get back to the Shita Mekubetzes. The Shita Mekubetzes holds that since a guy is excluded from Shchutei Chutz, that means the guy could shecht his carbon anywhere on the face of the earth, Hachinami, so too, we're going to exclude his carbon from the Iser of Shchutei Chutz. Now watch what's going on here. That since the guy is allowed to shecht his carbon anywhere, and is no Iser Shchutei Chutz, because the Torah says, Bnei Yisrael mitzuv mal Shchutei Chutz, v'en akum mitzuv mal Shchutei Chutz. Therefore, the carbon of a guy is not included in the Iser of Shchutei Chutz, which means that Yisrael is allowed to shecht his carbon, the carbon of a guy, outside of the Azor. V'tzarech bir. I don't get it, he says. Ti'ein b'mashma, you cannot derive from mi'uta dekra, the only thing that you can derive from the pasuk of Bnei Yisrael to the exclusion of goy is el shagoyim einam chayofim mishum shkutei chutz. But eich mashma mi pasuk zeh, how are you going to derive from this mi'ut of Bnei Yisrael shekarbanam, their carbon is ma'it mi'chiyum shkutei chutz? That's his question. So I wanted to suggest something, and I'm wondering if Rabosa, you could maybe help me along, because I only have the germ of an idea.
What's the last part of that?
Again, a guy is excluded from the Iser Shchutei Chutz, he can check his carbon anywhere on the face of the earth. Therefore, the kachim of a guy is excluded from Shchut Eichutz, which means if Yisrael wants to shecht this carbon of a guy, let's say, as I said before, maybe the guy will ask me to do me a favor. You know, the guy says, I never went to Shchita school, so you do me a favor, do the Shchita, this carbon outside the Azor in my backyard in South Carolina, then there's no Issa to do so. So the Rosh Hashiva is asking, you're really jumping, you know, from one to the other. The Pasuk says, B'nei Yisrael velo akum, only as far as what? Only as far as the guy in his relationship to the Isur Shchut Eichutz, he's not included in the Isur Shchut Eichutz. How does that in any way, you could join us if you like, how does that in any way give us the fact that Kodshei Akum doesn't lend itself to the Isur Shchut Eichutz? Now the Yisrael wants to be the Shliach for the guy to do the Shchita Bachutz. So I wanted to suggest a little bit of a germ of an idea. What we're saying now is that when a guy is magdish a carbon, that carbon doesn't belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning, the whole Yisod, the definition that underlies Shchut Eichutz, the Yisod of Shchut Eichutz, is that you know where this carbon belongs? It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara. You take it out of the Azara, you're undermining the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is, so to speak, the balabas on this carbon. But if a guy is makdish a carbon, he's not really giving it to the Beis HaMikdash. How do I know that? He's allowed to do it anywhere on the face of the earth. That carbon is not in any way related or in the web of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Beis HaMikdash is not grabbing onto that carbon. Haraya, he's not mitzuvin shchut eichutz. So his hakrava, when he's makdish a carbon, is not hakrava in the Beis HaMikdash. It could be in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe, you know, we would enhance the hakrava by bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash if Christopher decides to do so and will accept his karbon. But it's not necessary. So inherent, if I want to know what's inherent essential to his hakdasha, right? Hakdasha, meaning when he's magdash the karbon, he's mafresh the karbon, it's not Beis HaMikdash. It's not really designated for the Beis HaMikdash. Because the guy is not enjoined or restricted to the Beis HaMikdash. The guy's karbonos, it are international, you know, they're anywhere in the face of the earth. So maybe if the Yisrael now shechts the carbon of a guy of Kodshei Akum outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there's no violation. Why? Because the Yisrael is not robbing the Avodah, it's not robbing the Beis HaMikdash of this Avodah, because this Avodah has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash inherently. Can that make any sense?
Yes.
So Ben, you are you going to write a letter to the Rosh Hashiva and say, well, you heard an answer to this question from Rabbi Berzel?
I found out that he gives a little chabura Thursday night thinking about Mordechai.
Oh no!
For graduates of
you asked the wrong guy that question.
And I'm going to see if I can
sneak in.
No, I'll ask him. Could I come?
Right.
I'm learning a sefer. Could I? I'll wear a white shirt if you want. I'll wear a hat. Right. Learn Torah. I'll dress up as a Disney character. Whatever you want.
Right. Interesting. I'm wondering what they're going to say, because, you know, when you invite your alumni, so the question is, what's the point? Is the point just Torah netto, you know, pure Torah, or is it also, this is the way we continue the chevershaf, that friendship that we established, you know, as a Rebbe Talmud relationship in the yeshiva. And then someone else is sort of like a foreign element here. So I don't know what's going to happen.
You know? I can always ask. I can say
no, that. For sure you should ask. My guess, if I had to guess, it's 51-49 in my mind. He'll invite you to come. He'll say, why not join? And then tell him, yeah, Rebbe, I'm learning your sefer. So then he'll say, for sure you should join. You're an unofficial alumni, an associate alumni of Chevron Yeshiva. I'm not sure that any of these shiurim, by the way, that were given by the Rosh Hashiva were given in Chevron Yeshiva. That history, I don't know. You'll find out for me. Because I have a feeling that his chabura, which he taught Kachim, was maybe it was in the physical structure, the edifice of Chevron Yeshiva, but I think it was off on the side. You know, that I don't know.
Anyway, thank you everyone for accommodating a later.
Yes,
I appreciate it.
Shkoyach to you guys.